Before we get going this week, I thought I'd just remind you that I'm a certified business strategist who's been in property for over 25 years. I know my clients shortcut their success by being laser focused through strategy and mentoring, as no one business model fits us all, because funding, geography, skill set, it all plays a part in deciding what works for you. Getting it wrong can definitely damage your wealth. If you're serious about property, then your first step is a call with me. Nothing more difficult than following the link in the show notes to book it. Hello, and welcome to the Property Solopreneur podcast, a show for property investors and developers who want to build and grow their own profitable businesses. I'm sharing with you my decades of property experience and interviewing many other successful property people who are happy to share their varied and priceless knowledge freely. Business doesn't need to be hard, and nor do you need to be lucky. But as a certified strategist, I know you need a plan to work to. And a good start is by listening to other people's successes and failures. Why reinvent the wheel? This allows us to have a more in-depth knowledge of the wider property world. Hello, welcome to this episode of the Property Solopreneur. And I think it's very useful from time to time to hear from those who've built big property businesses. They've got so much experience that they can teach us little tiny nuggets that will make all the difference to us. It may sound odd if you've not thought about it, but property people such as my guest today, John Hadd, have operated and profited, and profit is not a word that everyone remembers in property, in every type of marketplace. And they've got very fixed expenses. They've got employees who need to be paid every single month. They've got probably quite sizable overheads that need to be paid. And they can't just scale up or scale back their systems, people, or activity just because there's trouble ahead on the horizon. Therefore, they've got to think very carefully about strategy, long-term planning, and the ability to read what's coming next. And I think it's things like that that can make all the difference to us who have smaller property businesses. Now, if you've never given the words long-term planning or strategy any thought because you think, I've just got a small business, I don't need to do that, well, think again. It makes all the difference. And if you want to scale and grow your business, well, come and have a conversation with me via a discovery call. Just go to my website, racheltroughton.com, spelled A-E-L, incidentally, and click on the banner. It's as simple as that. And let's get talking about how you can work smarter, not harder, and start to see the results that you want to do, because it's all too easy to be very busy in property and not to achieve very much. Now, John Howard is very well known. He's known to many people because he's on the TV, but I don't have satellite TV and was none the wiser until I went to a local property meeting one very wet Friday in December and met him. Now, he was there to support Tristan Gordon, the host. And incidentally, if you've not heard Tristan's story, then go and listen to episode 84. He was talking about the development they'd done together, but primarily he was there to talk to the whole room about the potential problems that he could see in the marketplace coming up. He told us, frankly, that there was trouble ahead, which had the whole room in consternation, because up till then, you know, interest rates had been absolutely level, right down rock bottom. Life had been wonderful for property investors and developers, but he was seeing changes. And it was just literally just a few months before everything started to change radically. Well, of course, what became obvious was that his reading of the future was based on his knowledge and trends. He's been in property for over 40 years, and that's through quite a number of boom and busts. And the thing about boom and busts is there are key elements that are the same and some things that are different. But you've got to learn to know what the difference is if you want to survive. He's bought, sold, developed over 4,000 buildings in over 80 different towns and cities in the UK. So he's thought about things on a national level, not just about a microclimate, you know, just in Suffolk or just in Hampshire or somewhere like that. So that was really interesting for all of us who have portfolios that are very diverse. I've got three in different places, and the microclimate is very different in Salisbury than it is in Stoke-on-Trent. Now, he is also known locally, because he works and lives in Suffolk, for his waterside development in Ipswich, which is very much a big regeneration project. Big regeneration projects are a gift to small investors and developers, because where one happens, we can really work effectively and make money on the coattails. Now, I'm quite sure I'll never want to do a £27 million regeneration scheme of flats in a marina. That's not me. but it's fun to hear about it from someone who has. Well, welcome this afternoon, John. For those who've not met you before, who are you and what do you do?
That's a very good question, Rachel. So I've been a property developer and investor for over 40 years. I bought and sold over 4,000 properties, 4,500 nearly, actually, in 87 different locations across the UK.
My word. And they're not all the same type of transaction either, are they? You're right across the board.
Yeah, right across the board. It's interesting because your strategy has to change as the market changes. And I think there's a lot of one-trick ponies out there, but actually you need to be ahead of the game. And when everyone's getting into something, you need to be the one coming out of it into a new strategy, really.
So it is, I would gather from that that you're not a great fan of somebody being in a little closed box going, right, okay, to make my fortune in property, I am going to do this particular business model. And then regardless of what happens, just persevering down that one avenue.
I think that's dangerous. And I think, I do a few seminars a year, not many because I'm busy doing my own projects. But during those seminars, what I do, it's comprehensive. And the reason it's comprehensive is because even if you don't want to know about or want to develop certain aspects of property, you need to know about all aspects of property so that, one, you don't get your leg lifted by someone who, you might have a mixed-use development and know nothing about commercial, where they might rip you off and pay you virtually nothing. You might think it's a great deal and it's not. So you do really need to know about everything. It's not just sitting on specializing in one thing particular. And the other thing is a lot of these educators, I think they do that because they don't know about anything else. So they only teach them what they know about, and they haven't got the breadth and the width of experience, I think, or the depth.
Absolutely. And you started off very young in property and, inherited a business, tripled it and everything else. So
yeah.
Really fundamental business work underpays everything you do then, isn't it? You understand how businesses work on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, and I think also you learn an awful lot more when things aren't going well than when things are going right. And I think the one thing really bugs me is that you get people at these events saying, oh, well, it's easy, anyone can do it. You learn far more when things go wrong about yourself and about how to get out of difficult situations and problems than you ever do when things are going well. When things go well, you think it's going to work every time and you're wonderful and everything, it's sunny, every day's a sunny day. And in reality, life's not like that, and neither's property.
No, and also, of course, everyone thinks it's just you and property. It's you and then everyone doing the property for you and the funder and the market. So actually, there's four of you in this going, and you've got to get it all in the right place at the right time and come out the other end ahead, really, haven't you? Doesn't always happen.
You need, I hate the word parroting, Rachel, as you do, I'm sure.
But yes.
You do need, hate it, but you do need a good team behind you.
Yep.
And my advice is to spend the most you can afford on the right team, because the difference between a really good lawyer and one that's just okay, or a really good surveyor and one that's just okay, is not that much difference. And the difference in the quality and the deals you do, or stopping you making a mistake and doing a deal that you shouldn't do,
yes,
is vast.
But also, I think the biggest problem is people get very swept up in the property bit, not realizing that everything else behind the scenes has got to be paid for. It's got to be done on time. You've got returns to HMRC. There are legal requirements. That's the non-sexy, non-seen stuff that actually trips up an awful lot of small property people.
Well, I have to say, most of it's not sexy.
No.
And most of it's hard work. and you don't always make money.
No, that's a bit of a frightener, isn't it?
Most people, that's a frightener for some people. I mean, I would literally, Rachel, I was talking to a friend of mine who's very, very successful, mainly commercial developer. And I said to him, be honest with me, how many of your developments really work and you make money on? And he said, 7 out of 10 work really well, John. 1 is a total mitigating disaster normally. Everything goes wrong.
Oh,
and 2, we wish we hadn't done them.
So if you're only going to do 3 in your lifetime, the chances are that they aren't going to be the good ones, are they? That is quite terrible.
I always think the third syndrome deal is the dangerous one, because people do the first deal and perhaps they don't know as much as they should, but they're ballsy and it works.
Yeah.
It comes off.
Yeah.
And they make good money. The second deal, they sort of think they know what they're doing and make less money, but it's okay. Yep. And the third deal, they normally balls up on and lose all the money they've made in the first two.
Yes, because it's something like 50% of all developers go bust, isn't it?
That's great. That's, I thought that was restaurants in the first year, Rachel, not property developers. No, my goodness.
It is very both, high. Is it? Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. And that's because those who keep going, you've...
Perhaps I should stop after 40-odd years.
I think you're keep going. But I also think that, you know, there's also a difference between, you know, what actually is a developer versus what is an investor. Would you have a definition?
Yes, without question. It's so different. Now, I get a lot of people, can I help them go from one to the other?
Yeah.
And the honest answer is not always, because some of them are just not suited to being a developer. It's a totally different skill set.
Yeah.
You know, being an investor is, you know, you can be relatively cautious and safe and steady, if you like. Whereas with being a property developer, yes, you can make money much quicker. And we try and de-risk everything because people tend to think that developers, and I do both, but people think that developers are real risk takers. And actually, the truth is we de-risk everything as much as possible. And I have three sections of every deal that I'm relieved to get back. The first is the bank's money. That's the most important.
Yep.
The second thing is my own money. I don't have investors, fortunately. I can't think of anything worse. But if I had the investors' money,
yep.
And once that's back, then if we make a profit, it's not a bonus that we make a profit. We expect to make a profit, but it's still the third, the least most important. The first is the bank, so they won't take your house off you.
Yep.
The second is your own money, so you can go again on another deal if this one doesn't work properly.
Yep.
And the third is making some money yourself.
Yeah. Sounded like an old door.
Yeah, it's an old door. It's an old house. It dates back to 1200. Yours is very old as well.
Yeah, and mine only goes back to 1490, though.
Well, I wish mine went back to 1979 rather than bloody 1200 and something or 1400 and something. I mean, I don't know about you, but...
Oh, I've got no electricity at the far end.
Oh, just honestly.
Yeah, we're short of doing a massive refurb and we're doing many other projects on the estate. We just went, well, could just have a candle.
Well, it's interesting is that your main house normally that takes the brunt for everything else being done, doesn't it? And
yeah.
Your house is a bit like a builder. It's the last one to do.
Yes, absolutely.
Last one to get sorted. But anyway, sorry about
that. That's
Rachel.
All right. No, it's always fun games. Now. Absolutely.
We're all good.
Yeah, absolutely. So I understand that because one of the things that I'm very aware of is although I do developing, it's quite small scale because we own the buildings to begin with. So that risks a lot. We've got 14 unused buildings that we're bringing back into use.
That's amazing.
It's rather fun. And they literally go from everything from a silo right down to a chicken shed via a Tudor barn.
Tudor barn, how wonderful. And the thing is that under the PD for agricultural buildings, I suppose, it's made it a lot easier, isn't it?
Yeah, there's all sorts of things we're doing at the moment. And that's great fun. But I know that I did, it must have been 15 years ago, I was one of those classic investors who'd done terribly well and thought, I mean, how difficult can doing a development be? You know, and I spoke to all the wrong people who I was very used to working with. They were small-time builders who went, oh, yeah, I can build a block of flats. I can do this. So I ended up with, I had four semi-detached houses, a block of flats, and I had two back brick refurbs going on when the credit crunch hit and everything else. And I just realised in an instance that I didn't have that skill set to be a full-time developer because I do like my night sleep well. I like to sleep well. I don't like being constantly thinking, is tomorrow disaster day?
Yes.
And also I like to be able to control things more. So I'm quite happy doing what I do. And I think it's important for people to realise what they want to be and where they work best, isn't it?
I think the first place to start is what do you enjoy doing? What interests you? And what's your appetite for risk? What's your appetite for success? Do you want to be a multimillionaire? Are you happy with, you know, just having a very lovely income for the next 20, 30 years? Everyone's got different aspirations. And I think that's so important. The first thing I always start off with my seminars is, you know, what do you actually want to do?
Yeah.
Because actually, it's not for me to say what you want to do. I can give you all the tools to do many things improperly. I've got a friend that buys lock-up garages. It bores me to tears listening to him, but, you know, that's what he makes a lot of money at it, and that's great. So there's lots of things you can do in property. It's not for me to decide for you. It's for you to decide what you want to do, and I'll support and help you do that.
Absolutely. One of the things, whilst we're talking about your seminar, one of the things that I loved was the list of what you get out of it. And I have to say, it wasn't full of sizzle and everything else, because one thing that leapt out at me was, I can teach you what to do when things go wrong.
Spot on. And that's so, Rachel, that is so important, isn't it?
I mean, I thought, oh, wow, that's all the only thing you needed to tell me back, basically, because, you know, that's when you... Yeah.
It goes right, it's easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And I have been in that position where you have to think. And that leads very nicely onto the fact that you have something called the Recovery Fund, don't you?
Yes.
How does that work? Because those two ideas are quite intertwined, aren't
they? Not as well as I'd hoped, to be honest with you. So the idea of the Recovery Fund is I've got a business partner who's got a hedge fund, which does help a little bit, to be fair, at times. And he said to me, look, we've got, you know, this was a few years ago now, look, there's lots of developers in trouble, this, that, the other. Let's hope it's not going to be us. I said, hopefully it won't be. So we start a recovery fund where we will support other developers who need some money to finish a project and who can't get it from the bank. And we will share the upside with them. We'll jump in and sort things out and all the rest of it. We will talk to banks, and if banks want us to put some money in or want just advice, we can give them that in order to get the best out of it they can.
Yep.
And if it's with a receiver, then we want to hear about it because we want to buy them.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the only bit that's really worked, to be honest with you, is advice to people who are in trouble. But of course, because they're in trouble, they can't afford to pay us anything. So that hasn't worked very well.
But could you not pay us to
But I still give the advice, Rachel. But
it's gratification because you can get it at the back end.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And actually, it's quite nice to hear people who got more problems than you for a change sometimes. So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say about that is that most of them are in the same situation. Nothing is finished.
Yeah.
Nothing is finished. So it could be 10 houses all nearly finished. It could be 20 houses nearly finished. It could be 3 houses in total nearly finished. Nothing gets bloody finished.
Yeah.
So if it's 3 houses, my advice is stop working on 2 of them if you're in trouble. Put all your money into the one that you can complete and sell it.
Yeah.
Get some money back to the bank. You give some support to the bank. Give some confidence to the bank that you know what you're doing. If it's 10, get 3 finished. If it's 20, perhaps get 6 finished. But for Christ's sake, stop trying to do everything and just concentrate on the ones that are either under offer. And even if they are, actually, if you've got 10 under offer and you haven't got enough money to finish the 10, then just still do 3, you know, and then do the next 3 and 3 or whatever it might be. That's the biggest thing we found. And if I said to you, out of 10 deals we've got on the go at the moment, we're doing 7 of them are from via receivers. So the receiver bit has worked.
Yes.
The bits before the receiver bit haven't really worked, unfortunately, very well.
And that's a shame because, of course, if it's got the receiver, then they really are, they're out of it.
Oh, totally out of it. And the problem is most people, and this is also really important, we're talking about getting out of problems. You need to identify the challenges and problems that you might have way, way before you're in trouble. Way before you're in trouble. And what happens is they don't identify them. They don't do anything, so they don't think about it. So the time actually they're in trouble, it's too late. You know, you can't help them. It's too late. I had one in Scotland recently, lovely couple. And I felt so sorry for them in one way. But then as I got back on the train to come back to Edinburgh, I thought, well, actually, I do feel sorry for them. And I would have put some money into the deal to help them, but it was actually no point because they're going to go bust.
Yes.
So, you know, but then they left it far too late to do anything. So you think, well, you know, business, you know, property is a tough game, as you know, Rachel. And the problem is people don't really take it as a business.
No.
A lot of them, It's a really tough business to be in.
Yeah.
And you have to be tough, don't you? And you have to make tough decisions. And that might be, my dream is to do 6 lovely houses. That's my dream and all this rubbish. You know, well, it might be, but just get 1 finished first or 2, you know?
And it is about learning your trade. So what I find amazing is that there is this huge influx from people through in many areas who come in going, you know, I'll do 1 property and I will suddenly be as well educated as someone with a string of degrees after my name in various property sort of areas. And I will know it all. And you just think, no, you've got to learn who to pick work with and who to go and talk to at all the right times. And again, I know that one of your videos I thought was brilliant was on the fact you have to work with the right bank. Because actually, if you're good at this, all the banks will lend to you.
Yes.
It's just the right bank at the right time with the
It's the right bank at the right time for the right project.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that really does make a huge difference to how you work with people. And of course, if you perform well for that bank, next time round, they'll be keener to lend, and they'll probably might even do it slightly less interest rate as well.
Yes, and again, it is that is the thing. People don't realise that when you start to do lots of different things at that level, interest rates are written up for you almost, aren't they?
It's not absolutely.
What's sitting outside on the board.
No, and they're chasing you a little bit more than you chasing them, which is nice. Not always, by the way, but no? Sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. You know, that's always a very good thing, because no developer is just an island, is it? As I say, they're, you know, finance, and then you've got the market. Now, the market, none of us can really pin down, can we?
It's very difficult. I always say to keep, everyone needs to be humble. And I think, you see people sat next to their Ferrari, they're probably rented for the day on these videos. It does drive me nuts. But anyway, and I always think, at the end of the day, you're only as good as your next deal.
Yep.
You're only as good as your next deal. And if that deal isn't very good, you're not very good. So, at the end of the day, you show me a property developer that has never lost any money, I'll show you a liar. And at the end of the day, we all need to remain humble, because, if you get one or two wrong in a row, two or three wrong in a row, it can be disastrous. So, and you need that inner confidence, but you also need to be humble about it. Because there's always someone far better and more cleverer than you are making a lot more money than you, is the truth.
Yes. And of course, the other thing is that things come out of the ether, don't they? I mean, Lynn Truss threw a spanner in the works unexpectedly. And so, which may not cause everybody a problem, but if you are just at the wrong point in your development, or you're very new to all of this, it can just take your legs away, can't it?
It certainly can. And timing is everything. And we did the development here in Ipswich of 150 flats. And my wife said to me before we did it, it was a shell, again, receivership, shell finish. You can see it from everywhere in Ipswich.
Oh, that's the worry rack, isn't it?
She came out of Marks & Spencer's and she looked up and she said, "You don't want to get this one wrong, darling. I can see it. We can see it from everywhere in Ipswich. It'll be very embarrassing for me." I said, "Be a lot more embarrassing for me, darling. I can assure you, if I get this one, 20 million quid."
Yeah.
Anyway, fortunately, we didn't. But you are putting yourself out on a bit of a limb at sometimes,
Absolutely. And so we all see that the big wigs put out reports now and again.
Yeah.
How seriously should we take them, and what should we be looking for in them?
Well, what I would say is the sharpest people in the business, in my view, are the major 10 house builders.
Yeah. They're the canaries in the mine.
Yes. And they're at the coalface every day, and I would take notice of what they say very seriously, more than I would a Savills report or all these other reports or Rightmove that say, a Nationwide saying, "Oh, the market's gone up 2.4% this month." Really? Well, one is a micro market, so your area might be much better than that, or it might be a lot worse. So I always do two things: talk to the local agents and get them to answer the question honestly to you. And secondly, I read reports from the house builders. And at the moment, Persimmon, for instance, have just come out and said that this year is not going to be any better than last year, and that actually their reserve list, the properties that are reserved to purchase by buyers,
yep,
is a third down than it was last year, a third down on this time last year.
That is a big down.
That's a big down.
Yeah.
So all this business about, the market's looking up, things are looking up. Yes, in certain cases, it is a little bit better than last year. I would agree with them. But for these house builders, clearly not a lot. And, they're all hoping that interest rates come down. I think it might be 0.25% in June. It's not looking very sexy. That's not very exciting or anything else. The budget was grim. We all thought maybe they'll do something, the Chancellor would do something on Help to Buy, first-time buyers, 1% deposit. Interestingly, Bellway have come out with 1% deposit.
Right, which is a big help, really.
Massive help for the first 5 years. The devil will be in the detail, of course.
Of course, absolutely. It always
is. As always.
So headline is so...
Please don't take it as read until you've spoken to Bellway.
Absolutely. And I don't think people take enough sort of sight lines from these things. So I was doing a build in Stoke-on-Trent, and which was right adjacent to one of the really big...
You're brave, aren't you? Stoke-on-Trent.
Oh, I love it. Stoke, I love. Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. Yes. My builders all came from there, and I got to know it really, really well. I love it. Still invest up there, still have stuff. But I was doing this, very small scale thing, and next door to me was one of the big boys. And suddenly, this is just before the credit crunch, and I was totally unaware that the world was about to change. Suddenly, literally overnight, they shut their site. They just
absolutely.
They just collapsed their show home, and it was gone.
Yep.
End gone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They are at the sharp end, Rachel, so they know what's happening before anyone else. So, for instance, not this year, not this last or November, but the November before, they all shut their sites. They all just shut down. They closed all, most house builders, major house builders closed. They never went on to the second phase. If they're on the second, if they're on the first phase, they're closed, bang, and waited 3 months to see what was going to happen. And in fact, I did the same thing in Birmingham on a site there we got, which was again part finished, off receivers. We sold the first eight quite well, but I could see things slowing right down. I thought, crikey, if I do the next 14,
yeah,
I can see myself paying a huge amount of interest out over a much longer period than otherwise would normally be. And I can see myself getting in difficulties with that site. So we closed it. Absolutely. We sold the eight, closed the site, paid off the bank, fortunately, with the eight we sold. And now we're just literally doing the next four at the moment, which is interesting. And would you believe it? I've sold them to Birmingham City Council, who are meant to be bankrupt. But that's another story.
Oh, they are, aren't
so
they?
You tell me. You tell me.
Yeah. I don't think the right hand always knows what the left hand is doing.
Definitely not.
Now, you've had quite a lot of fun and doing quite a lot of things on TV, haven't you? Which always strikes me as being great fun. I have to say, when I worked with the Army, I was always told I had a great face for radio, which is why I love doing podcasts.
You've got a great face for TV as well.
Very kind, but I do, you know, it was one of those things. But you've had enormous fun, and it's very varied, isn't it, what you do? And one of the things that really struck me was the Sky Property Question Time.
Yes.
Do you find the same questions come up time and time again, or are they much more varied than you imagine?
I never bother looking at them until I should do probably on occasions I get caught out, but I genuinely, they send the questions to me. And I think, you know what, I can't bother to read these, because what I quite like it, I think if you're not careful, you can come up with a bit of a sort of stodgy answer by reading it and reading it again. And, you know, and actually Stephen's pretty good. He's the presenter. He's very, very knowledgeable, because he worked for Cluttons. He was a consultant there for many years, very experienced. So he actually comes up with a very good second question. So the first question might be a bit boring, but then he'll come up with a second question on the back of it. So it sort of saves the day a little bit. But I quite like the fact that I don't know what the question is. I quite like that. Whereas others on the show, and I get put on the show quite a lot with people who are first timers on the show. So I help them along a little bit and, you know, cajole them a little bit and make sure they get a good airtime. Because what happens if you're not careful, it's quite a skill, which apparently I've got, to allow the other person enough time, because it's very easy to jump in and there isn't any real second takes. What you see is really what you get. If there's a bit of noise, they'll stop and say, look, we've got to do that bit again. But really, it's great training, because they don't allow you any time. It's, you're in, you're doing it, you're out. And actually, to give someone who's a little bit nervous and who is first time on there enough airtime and help them a little bit if they're struggling to, you know, with a question or ask them. Sometimes Stephen knows me so well now, we work so long together, that it may be a question and I can think of another question which is easy for them to answer. So, well, what about, you know, I can step in if it looks like they're struggling a little bit. So, and I've met so many good people, by the way, through that show. I don't want to tell them that, but I've met virtually everyone I work with in property recently in the last few years, and the Property Elevator show, the Property Graduate I do, I've met through Property TV. Yeah.
Yes. But it is, as you say, it is a skill, because the majority of us don't get to see much of those sorts of programs in production. But we do get to see people answering live at property meets when they have panels.
Yes.
And some people are really good on panels. Others are hopeless, because either they can't think of a single thing and they sit there like a rabbit in a headlight, even though it's their specialist subject, or they never have the chance, they don't have the power to knock through and to become the speaker and answer the question.
Yeah, I have to say, there are some very boring people on panels, aren't there? Sit there, it's 9 o'clock at night, 9:30, and they're banging on and you just think, what am I doing here? I've got a 3-hour journey home. What am I doing this for? But the other day I spoke at an event in Birmingham, and I was staying in Manchester, it didn't matter, right? It was fine. And I got an email from someone the next day saying, John, I'd just like to say, I really enjoyed you, but didn't get on to 9:30 or something crazy.
Oh my God.
On and on. And if nothing else, but for your for this comedic value. And I thought, well, I'm not sure that's a compliment or not, really, but I answered it and said, look, thank you so much. You know, if I can help you any further, please do let me know. And by the way, the reason I tried to keep it lively, it was so late. I didn't want anyone dropping off, you know.
But yes.
I actually find it, I have to say, I find all that sort of thing quite easy.
Well,
I didn't think I would because I was a stammerer. When I was 18, well, until I was 19, I stammered quite badly. And, you know, I never thought I'd be standing up, you know, making speeches and doing live shows and so on. But there we go. It just shows you how, if you work at things, sometimes they come round.
Yes. And I wish more people would actually work at what they're doing in property. Might make everyone's life a lot easier. But when you mentioned earlier as well that you did Property Graduate and Elevator, they're very different sorts of programme, aren't they? You're working there, everyone's competing. It's a bit like sort of Property Apprentice almost, isn't it?
Absolutely. So what happened was Property TV said to me one day, have you got any ideas for shows? I went, yeah, I have, yeah. And they went, what are they? I went, oh, well, I need... I'm not sure we should be laughing in this podcast all the time, should we, Rachel?
Oh,
we'll carry on laughing.
Life is to be laughed. We're
you know, isn't it? I tell you, it's refreshing to have a podcast where it's not all these terribly, terribly serious questions.
Oh, God, you don't learn anything from a serious question.
No, I think, Rachel, you've got it spot on, by the way. So Property TV said, well, what are they? So, well, one's a bit like Dragon's Den and the other's a bit like Apprentice. Okay, so what happened was we started doing the Elevator show, and what happened was I owned half the show and Property TV owned half of it, and the guys who and girls who came on the show as other angels paid me to be on the show.
All right,
that's how it started.
Yeah.
And then after to start with, no one really knew what they were doing, you know, including the producer. It was a bit of a you know what. Anyway, as the series went on, it got better and I got better sponsors for it. And Ranjan, who is, you know, people say, is he a friend of yours? Isn't he a friend of yours? You know, not quite sure. Well, put it this way, he's the gift that keeps on giving.
He is. I've known him for years, yes.
He's the gift that keeps on giving. You know, he turned up the other day for Series 7, which comes out in June on Property TV. He came, and he looked like a 1970 porn star with his suit on, you know. I mean, you just can't make it up. And I told him so on air. And so he said, look, I'm really the star of the show because I've got 60,000 YouTube followers. So I said, yeah, well, you're not really the star, Ranjan, but I see where you're going with it. And he said, look, you know, you're getting quite a lot of sponsorship in now and we think we should have a share of it. So I said, you know what I'll do? I'll buy the shares of Property TV, which is what I did, and I sold them to the rest of the other angels. So we all own it together. No squabbling. Well, there shouldn't be any squabbling. Of course, yep. There is.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's great fun to make. And we just finished doing the series 7. I can't believe we've got Series 7. We've got a really good sponsor in Roma Finance. And he's on the show. So Scott Marshall is the MD. He's on the show. And he advises us whether we could get funding on it and this sort of thing. So it's sort of morphed a little bit into something slightly different. But it's still got that element of education with it. Hopefully it's quite funny. You know, it's entertaining.
Yes.
Because it has to be entertaining.
Yes.
And unfortunately for me, the director says I've got to be Mr. Nasty. So I'm like, I've got to be the really tough one.
Yes.
And Ranjan comes across at times as being quite nice, which is totally, in real life, obviously totally opposite, of course. But, and then Paul's on there, you know, he's a bit of eye candy for the ladies.
Yep.
And some of the men, I'm sure.
Yeah. You've
got to have that. And we've got Hayley Andrews. She's lovely as well. She's really clever. She is, as is Paul. Paul's super bright. And then we've got Nicholas Warwick. He's very good as well. So it's a real blend. Of course, we all do slightly different deals.
Yes.
So we all like to do different things. So that's how it works. And one of the complaints about the show, if you like, or criticisms, I should say, is that, you know, not many deals get done in the end.
But well, isn't that just life?
But that's really, it is life. And really what happens is we say yes, and then it's not quite what they say, or they get gazumped, or, you know, there's other people haven't got the deal quite agreed. And so it's difficult. And Dragon's Den, I was talking to the producer of Dragon's Den in Glasgow about another show a few months ago. And she said, same with Dragon's Den, you know, so few deals get done in the end. And that's why they don't have an after show.
Yes.
Because it's hard. And she said it's really hard to get enough people on the show now as well.
Well, I should think it's very you know, sort of awe inspiring if you sort of think, gosh, I could do that. And the nearer it gets to, you know, the time, you think, oh, am I up to it? Well, what will they? Will they sort of tear me apart limb from limb? You know, how's it going to work, really?
Yeah, no, even with us, I mean, last time we filmed in the old Dragon's Den studio in Stoke Newington, which is great because we've got a little bit more room and all the rest of it than we've had before. And when all those lights are on and someone comes up the stairs and they're standing there in front of the lights, that really is, it's enough for anyone, really.
Yeah.
It's enough for anyone. It really is. Yeah, it's quite stressful.
I should think so. But the property graduate's different in that it is, you know, that's you helping to do a deal. I know you would, you know, you work with Tristan.
Well, that's the better show because, of course, yes. I own it 100%. So
absolutely.
That's definitely the better show.
The show then, yes.
Yeah, of course. So we've done three series of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's all about me picking a partner who I can work with, and I'll fund the first deal up to £1 million. And the idea is an old-fashioned one in as much that most of the profit stays in the company.
Yep.
And we do another deal and another deal and another deal together. So we build up a company together. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
And Alfie, who won the first year, it's been a bit slow, but we've got a deal we're doing in Hungerford. Tristan, who is second based in Norwich, we're just talking about finally getting a deal done, hopefully shortly. And Victoria, that won last year, she's a lot as advanced as the other two in terms of what they were doing anyway. But she's very, very, very capable, and she's got the, you know, she owns some property herself already and everything else, but hasn't done the sort of deals that I would perhaps want to do. So, but again, it's been a learning curve for her, and we're now in a stage where, you know, we think we've got a bit of an angle on a few things, and hopefully one of them will come off. So, you know, it's all three are very inspiring. Young people,
yes,
really.
Don't have to be young. No.
By any means, we had a 65-year-old doctor just retired on the show. We've had a 17-year-old student on the show. We've had all sorts.
But I think one of the things that does amaze people is how you think through the deal. That because to most people, they don't understand how you put a deal together. It's just, you know, they almost think somehow the agent is going to come up with a series of combinations of figures and facts.
You definitely wouldn't want that, would you? My goodness, those agents, my goodness. Of course, what really winds me up with agents is they've got no clue of what the building costs will be.
Yep.
Yet they know what the property is worth.
Ah, even after having done it up.
Well, I mean, they have got no idea. Exactly. They've got no idea. So say a property needs refurbishing.
Yep.
They've got no idea what it will cost to do.
Yep.
Yet they still think it's worth 100,000 more than it is because they haven't got the bill costs right. You know, they determine that, you know, that's true. And you think, well, no, because, you know, you ask them, well, what would it cost to put it right? That should come off the purchase price, shouldn't it? You know, they just don't seem to get it. They're just hoping to find what I call a retail punter who's actually falling in love with it and will pay somewhere near what it's worth when it's done.
Yes.
Because it's so lovely and it's what they want and everything else, which is fine if it's a very pretty little cottage somewhere, probably they get away with it, but they won't get away with it on some of the stuff we have to buy.
No, I was quite amazed. I went to a property meeting in London where Tristan was presenting some of his things, and he showed this building that was so pig ugly, it was unreal. There was absolutely nothing lovable about it at all except the figures.
Yeah.
And it was a commercial deal and all the rest of it, but it was fascinating because he had the whole room spellbound because he was showing things from a different perspective. And that, I think, is part of the attraction of watching things like your programs, because it's out of our comfort zone. Because, you know, most of us are very, very vanilla-y in this sort of residential space only. And commercial, we might do a commercial to residential sort of tiny development, nothing big. So it is quite fun to see something completely outside the comfort zone, to do it almost as a voyeur.
Yes. Well, it's like when you analyse every deal, and I say this to people, you know, when you're analysing a deal, you're learning every time you analyse a deal. We all do. And it's not costing you anything either.
No. Oh, I suppose it doesn't, absolutely. And talking about deal flows, that's a trendy little phrase of the moment, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
It's not one of your favourite ones,
as if, Rachel, no one else has ever thought of that for the last 250 years. Yeah.
Are you telling me then it's not natural just to get to the end of a deal and then go, so how much money did I make and what shall I do now?
What shall I do? What shall I do next? Yeah. I mean, I have a rule, or well, not a rule, I have a bit of a, what I do is I have a list of my 10 best deals that I'm looking at the moment. Oh, top five. And what I do is that top five changes depending on the information I get and so on. So you might have, you know, say a deal in Birmingham that I'm looking to buy, number one, and then I find out that another deal is slightly better because it's, you know, I'm monitoring all these deals.
Yep.
And the key with all this is ask yourself the question to get the answer. And the question is, if you've got to do only one deal, which one would it be?
I don't know.
Because that's really the one to concentrate on. Because none of us can do some number of deals at once, perhaps. But, you know, depending where you are in where you are with the deals, sometimes, you know, like at the moment, I've got a lot of money coming in this year and I haven't got that many deals to do going out.
Yeah.
But everything at the moment is up here because all the money's out and I'm waiting for it to come in.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like a farmer. You're never happy.
You're always
too hot, too dry, too cold, too wet. And with property, you've either got too many deals, not enough deals, too much going out, not enough coming in. And so you're never really happy. And of course, you know, someone said to me the other day, well, this property game's all right, John, but the trouble is the money comes in and it's gone again.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, that's it.
That's it.
That's it. So well, when do you ever get the money yourself? So you don't really, you just carry on.
Yeah.
You just have more equity and more, you're worth a bit more on paper, but actually you don't really see it very much.
No, asset
and
cash.
And actually, I thought about that, and that's actually true, isn't it, when you think about it?
Yeah, it is.
That is actually true.
Yeah, and it is something that I don't think many people, because I'm on the parish council for my sins, so.
Helps with the planning, doesn't it, Rachel?
It does. I'm not allowed to vote on my own schemes.
Of course you're not.
No.
Of course you're not.
But it does mean that I watch and look over all the planning that comes my way very carefully.
Yeah.
And it is interesting that some people just live on a parallel universe as far as planning is concerned. Yeah. There are rules. I don't touch anything without my trusty planner who knows all the wrinkles, who knows what the local people like, all that kind of stuff. Worth his weight in gold, frankly. But they don't seem to understand that just because there is a field that is in the envelope that they can't just go in and put vast quantities of buildings in and make a super profit, and they get more and more wound up, and they don't seem to realize that there is a point at which there is no point in just constantly annoying everyone and going back for another rematch because you're losing money. Do you think that planning is an overthought of some dark art or something you outsource happily?
Do you know what? The planning situation in this country is pretty grim, really, isn't it? I mean, the one thing about Labour getting in, which no doubt they will, is that they will have the opportunity in the first 2 years, honeymoon period, to actually sort out the NHS a bit, sort out Greenbelt. Some of Greenbelt should be expanded and some should be reduced in different areas, and also sort out the planning framework, because at the end of the day, it's so difficult. Too many houses are being built down south, in my view. Not enough are being built up north. I don't know the stats, but I bet you it's something like Birmingham down is probably 70% of the houses being built in the UK, maybe 30% Birmingham upwards, I'm guessing. But and also, you know, you need to attract people to move up north, to build up north. And to do that, the only way you'll do that is through tax, probably, and tax breaks and so on. So I think there's an awful lot for any new government to sort out. And this government haven't managed to do so. I mean, that Michael Gove, he's been more left wing towards the landlords than I think any Labour politician.
Yes, and to that degree, it has to a certain degree that
very odd.
The problem between planning and the new rules for landlords constantly drip feeding over the last 6 years has just put a squeeze on almost everything.
Well, the joke is, and the Chancellor the other day said, well, we're going to drop capital gains for landlords or whatever, selling a house from 28% to 25%. Well, you don't want them to sell, you want them to buy more. But they're not going to buy more because they get clobbered with all this tax and everything else. And very, very difficult. And they really haven't helped themselves, this government, in my view. Really haven't.
But it'll be interesting to see what comes in. And you know, I have to say, I'm always amazed that you think somebody comes out and goes, right, we're going to really streamline this and make it very simple for people to be able to do what they want to do. And then it's all a series of classes and subclasses and clauses and goodness knows what. And you think, there is no way anyone's going to understand this.
The one the other week was two houses, a house could be put into two flats. But then, okay, well, that's sort of PD, makes a bit of sense, I suppose. But the, like you said, the devil is in the detail. There's no detail yet. Then I'll be doing. So
yes, it's not
very, very difficult. The only thing you could argue they got right in a way was permitted development on offices to residential. Now, PD, as it's known, has been around for many, many, many years. But in 2013, of course, they had this idea of permitted development being offices to residential. And of course, that really, mainly because the councils weren't allowing offices to go to residential. And it was cowboy country, really, because you didn't need to do anything. The outsides of them could remain the same. And of course, most architects now say, you know, the nickname slums of the future.
Yes.
Well, and I've got one friend who's just actually, he's no longer, he was MD of a very big property company. If I said, you'd know who he was, but you know the company, you'd know the company. But he said, oh, we went PD mad at one point, John. He said, we bought an office building and we converted into 400 flats. 400 flats. And then he said, we realized after we sold about 150 that we ran out of lending institutions, because what happens
is when you have
a big block,
yeah,
you need to make sure there's enough lenders who will lend on that block. Most of them say, well, we'll do 10% or we'll do 5% of the block, because they don't want to get overcooked with it all. And after about 150 flats, they ran out. And they said, we've had to just rent the damn thing. You know, they're all finished and they're rented. And he said, we can't sell them. There's no way. And of course, because it's now considered a rental block, because all the people we sold to were buy-to-let investors, it's worth less than it would be if it was a private block.
Yeah.
So now there's all these blocks around, and that's where you've got to really careful. Anyone listen to this, really careful. If you get offered some very cheap flats, they're probably in a former PD scheme, and they're probably, the whole block is probably tenanted.
Yeah.
And the values in those blocks is nothing like they are if it will be a private block. They are downvalued constantly. And the service charges on these blocks is another big problem for us going forward.
It will be, won't it?
Big
yes.
Problem.
I mean, I had a friend who rang me up and said, because we had a mutual connection, who had managed to buy one of those very ugly industrial estates, and right in the middle of it, so surrounded by all sorts of people making and doing things, had just created some perfect little flats and wondered why no one would lend on them.
Yeah, funny that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I always say this, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yes, absolutely.
And you really need to think very carefully. And the one question I ask myself to get the answer is, would I want my daughters to live there?
Yeah.
That's always a good one.
Yes.
Because if the answer is no, then what the hell are you doing?
Yes.
Because if you don't want, you know, no one else will either, probably.
Yes. Well, I have that attitude towards fire windows, because, you know, if you don't alter the windows in some houses, you know, it's fine, even though there aren't. And I always go, well, if I can't get out of that window, then I've got to change it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I couldn't sleep at night otherwise. But sadly, we can't chat forever. What deal overall, 40 years of doing all this, are you still looking back and going, that was a cracker, I'm so glad I did that?
Do you know what? I've thought about this the other week, because I was in the Cotswolds, and I can't believe we managed to buy it out. I honestly can't remember. You get the odd deal. We used to, not so much now, because there's more competition.
Yeah.
But you get the odd deal, Rachel, I bet you have as well, where you read the brochure and you look at it, you think, well, this is too good to be true. I must have missed something here. Can't be right. There's five properties and they want, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But what it was, Blockley Court we bought in Blockley in the Cotswolds.
Lovely.
And it was a repossession, once again, 1993, you know, it was a repossession type period.
Yes.
Boom for us. And it was in the Cotswolds, in Blockley, which is a small village, and it was a former silk mill. And there was, I can't believe it now, I wish we kept the whole damn lot, of course, but that goes without saying, of course. It was five houses, terrace houses, needed refurbishing. They're all vacant. There was 12 flats. I think the rents were something like £12 a week time, all regulated tenants.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Maybe one or two were empty. Underneath it was a brook that went through because it was a silk mill.
So well, yeah.
The sides of the brook had broken and flooded the ground floor of the building. And everyone thought, wow, that's terrible. What a disaster. No one's going to touch it. Well, no one did touch it, fortunately for us, and we paid $175,000 for the lot.
My word.
For 18 properties. $175,000.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And the brook we repaired for about, we got a specialist company, and I think it was 6,000 quid. So it wasn't very much at all.
But it is about Europe.
And over the years, we've sold them off and done deals and sold them off.
Yeah.
We've got a few left, but that's going to be that's got to be one of the best deals we've done, isn't it?
Yeah. Got to be. Something that makes you smile at night when you're just thinking, when you've got a gloom, you can think and smile about
it. I have to say, I would say how things have changed over the last 30-odd years are the competition is vast now compared to then.
Really?
To those times. But yeah, the competition's a lot more. But funding is a lot easier. So it's a lot easier to get the funding now with all these bridging companies.
Oh, yes.
Because in the old days, you only really had the clearing companies, the NatWests and these types of people, until 2009, when then, you know, all these bridges, and there's over 1,000 bridges in the UK you can borrow off.
Oh. I mean,
it's amazing, really.
Yeah.
And they all make decisions within a couple of weeks and you can have the money. But the one question I asked them, if you really want to wind up a bridging company, ask them where they're getting their money from, because it's never their money. So they're like a super broker, really. So, and they get really uppity when you say that. And he said, well, it's not your money, is it? So where, you know, where are you getting your money from? And they'll go, half of them get it from Shawbrook, would you believe? Shawbrook.
Really?
Bank. Yeah, Shawbrook. Some of the big building societies lend it. So they lend it at obviously quite expensive rates to these bridges. And then the bridges lend it to you at even more. But you imagine if you were a bridger, you and I were setting up a bridging company now, we could get a facility, say, for 100 million straight away,
yeah.
50 million. And the reason we could do that, because we're not going to lend that money until there's a first charge on a property.
Yep.
So we don't get the money off them. Say Lloyds Bank are going to back us. So Lloyds Bank don't give us the money until there's the first charge on a property anyway. So we're only the middlemen.
Yes.
That's all we are.
Yeah.
We're the middlemen. So we're taking a cut of, say, 4% on the interest rate, probably. Oh, and the famous 1% up front and 1% at the end. You keep that.
Those little hidden costs.
Or it's 2% or whatever. So actually, all these bridges, they're just really a super broker who've got one client.
Yeah.
You know, they're just, you know, really... That's all they really are. They're a super, what I call a super broker.
Yes.
And they lend the money off, they borrow the money off, you know, some of the big institutions who need to lend it.
Yep.
But the joke was with Shawbrook, for instance, I've got quite a lot of money out with Shawbrook over 15 years and so on. And, you know, you get a deal, Shawbrook won't fund it, but then you go to one of the bridger will fund it. And who's he funded by?
Shawbrook.
So how does that work? More interest.
Absolutely. We're not going to let you have this cheap. Yes.
No, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Crazy situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
Well, it is. But obviously enormous fun because you're still in it and still clearly buzzing and loving it. And one of the, before you go, I will just say that I do think some people should just take notice of really plain and simple social media posts, because I think sometimes they're more effective than clever clogs ones. You did a brilliant one just going, this is what I'm doing. So I borrowed the money from, this is how I paid it back. It's great. Do you want to work with me?
Do you know what? That. Thank you. That interesting. That got so many views on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And bits. I couldn't believe it because it was very simple. And I thought, well, I'll give the bank a bit of a boost because, yeah, I'm all heart. And we might want to borrow some more money off them. So, but I'm going to do that again when it will, you know, with another bank, because actually that's quite effective. And people seem to like, they're nosy, aren't they? I think
they are.
People are quite nosy and,
and
they like to know what's going on. And the one thing that they always ask me, would you know, you might say, well, I'm doing this deal. And they go, well, what, how much money are you making? And I never tell them. I tell what the GDV is, but, you know, whether I'm making money or losing money, you can't win. Because if you say you're making good money on a deal, they go, oh, you know, well, they don't, no one likes hearing that particularly. And if you say you're losing money, it doesn't look good on you. They'd quite like that, but probably, but it doesn't look good on you. So I just don't, we have a policy where we don't, you know, we say what the GDV is and bits and what we might have spent on it, but we don't go into any more detail than that.
No, but also we wouldn't, you know, it seems to be perfectly permissible in the property world from people you've never met before in your life going, so what's your inside leg measurement and exactly how much do you own and how do you own it and all the rest of it and your precise equity and loan to value and all the rest of it. But they wouldn't dream of saying, say your stocks and shares portfolio, exactly, you know, what is it and how much you, it's a very weird thing, isn't it?
It's very odd. And I had there was something on Property Tribes, Vanessa Warwick's site. And this guy had emailed and said, I've just analysed all John Howard's accounts of his property companies. And I can just confirm that he's a very able person who is honest and trustworthy. And, you know, anybody would be proud of these accounts. I thought, well, I think I've got about 82 property companies, so I don't know which ones he looked at, but he must have been very busy because they're not all great.
No, and also
I'm pick the right ones, Rachel.
Yes, but also like that is what your accountant is employed to do, is to do the accounts.
Absolutely, but you just think how nosy people are. Have they got better things to do in their lives than sort of poking around people's business? But there you go.
Yeah, absolutely, and they may not understand.
Clearly not.
They may not understand clearly where you come from. You know, people always go, well, you don't own your house. I go, I know, I own the company that owns my house, and I'm one of those anomalies that are allowed to live in it. Because I'm a farmer. But they don't get to that last bit. They just go, oh, no, the rule says you can't do that, you know, on social media. You're wrong.
Well, some of the stuff people come out with is just unbelievable, isn't it?
But I just love that, plain and simple. In fact, I'd highlighted it to one of my clients going, if you want, you know, because he's very invisible, but he wants to be out there occasionally. And I said, it wouldn't help. You know, that's the kind of thing you can put out without having to be a dancing bear on TikTok or anything else.
And interesting, it was blowing a gale and I got the builder to hold... It was like, you know, I mean, talk about unprofessional. Normally, you know, someone turns up and it's all professional, like this is all professional and lovely. And it was like blowing a gale, wind, rain. And, you know, and you know, sometimes, you know, some of the less professional videos actually are more effective. Not always.
No,
but sometimes.
It was, well, it just goes to show how effective that one was because I picked it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you.
But thank you very much, John, for sharing your views this afternoon. You know, you've got a very busy schedule. Being able to find time is much appreciated.
Rachel, it's been an absolute pleasure and I'd love to do it again sometime.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Property Solopreneur with me, Rachel Troughton. If you've enjoyed this episode, do hit subscribe and kindly leave a review and share this podcast with anyone you think it would help on their property journey. If you'd like to get hold of my guide for building a successful property business, go to racheltroughton.com/checklist. We only live one life. So let's get your dream a reality through building a profitable property business. If you found my stories inspiring and my content useful, then come find out more about my mentoring and strategy sessions by going to www.racheltroughton.com and book a discovery call with me. The banner link is on every page. Come and create and grow your own property business. That's the shortcut to success.